I bet every single year in the NFL draft is total quarterbacks drafted in the first round. I bet it under every year. This is the ninth year in which we've had NFL draft betting. The under is 6-2. We usually overvalue quarterbacks all the time, whether it comes to conversations, narratives, everything. And that falls in the NFL draft, where we as bettors and simpletons, and I'm including myself in here, will generally just think that all these teams are so quarterback hungry and that they'll jump at the thought of going to get them.
This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's up, ladies and gents? Welcome in. This is another edition of Pod to the Futures. Usual crew on a Tuesday with you. Jonathan Von Tobel, Mitch Moss is here. We have a lot to get to. NBA playoffs currently underway. We are actually recording this on a Monday night, so minutes away, mere minutes away from Denver and Minnesota game two. So we won't have much on the NBA postseason, but there's a couple of things that we can hit. Also currently underway is this Knicks-Hawks game, game two of that series. And Mitch, Josh Hart has quite a few rebounds today, my friend. And you were upset with me before your show today because I guess I failed to mention that I may or may not have Josh Hart at 30-1 to lead the series in rebounding.
How did you not bring this up last week?
I don't know. I totally forgot.
How did you not tell me in like the 93 text messages that we share throughout the week?
That seems like an exaggeration, but we do share quite a few. He's got 11, as we're recording this right now, he's got 11. He's got
aware.
He's got double-digit rebounds into the first two games each.
Here's what happened, right? You know, looking at Monday's show, you try to handicap as much as possible and get some best bets out for everybody yourself, and then explain why you think it'd be a good bet to the entire audience. And if they want to tail you, great. If not, you know how the story goes.
Yeah.
So looking at this game, I'm like, boy, he had 14 again, huh? And I'm like, Josh Hart does this every stupid year in the playoffs. Like, he just turns it on. He'll play more minutes. And he's all, as I said on the show today, he's all guts and heart. And he's the one reason why, like, I kind of like this Knicks team, because I'm not typically going to be falling for the big market stuff. I just don't, I'm not that person. So, but anyway, I went back and looked, and the guy crushes it no matter who he plays in the playoffs, with either double-digit board games or averaging like 8.5, 9, 9.5, or more rebounds per series, by the way. So then, you know, he had 14 a game on, like, it's 7.5 tonight. I have to bet that. And then your show's ending and you run down the best bets. And I'm sitting there in the studio. I'm like, what? JVT has him 30-1 in pot. First of all, I was like, the number one thing that pissed me off was I was actually mad with myself. I'm like, how did I not look at that?
Yeah.
I thought I looked at like every single mark, but as soon as I saw that on the screen, I'm like, Mitch, you idiot. How do you not have Josh Hart as well? And then I thought, well, wait a second here. Why did my podcast co-host, who I talk to every single day and do a 1-hour weekly show with on Futures, not bring it up to me?
Slipped my mind. It's funny because in the Hardwood Handicappers group chat, which is another podcast that I am part of, with Kelly Bidlin and Zach Cohen, I've actually been harassing Cohen because Kelly's got it as well. I think he's actually got 35-1 and I've got 30-1. And it's actually something we've bet before in different series in the past. I can't remember what it was last year, but I had it with him as well. And it was a really good run. But I kept telling Zach, and we even had him on the show on Friday. And I'm like, dude, are you going to bet this or not? And he's like, nah, I don't want to do it. But he had bet him over rebounds for game one. And I was like, brother, you're going to miss out. And then sure enough, I text him on Saturday. I was like, he's the leader right now. So, hey, just bet every single game. It'll be the same. It'll be the same. Just bet every game over. You'll be good.
Yeah. Can I get 30-1 still? Is that available after game two?
I will be curious to see what the adjustment is. And again, right now, he is actually ahead of Cat again for the game. He's got 11. Cat's got 8. We'll see how this comes out in the wash. There's 5.5 minutes left to go in the contest as well. But, you know, these adjust because certain books will offer adjusted prices on these markets as well. You know, series leader and whatnot. The fun books. The ones out here in Nevada, for the most part, not so much. But I will be curious to see how it's going to be priced because Carl Anthony Towns, given his position and whatnot, and is going to still, I would gather, be maybe he won't be the favorite because we're two games in a series in which they might sweep, and I mean they're only up by 8 with 5.5 again, so we'll see what happens. But I'll be curious to see how they reprice it, because I would assume that it's still going to be, would you think that he is plus price given, like, let's just say he's got like a 4 board lead with the, you know, a 2-0 series lead?
No.
Yeah,
he's odds on.
Odds on.
Yeah, he's gonna be odds on.
Okay, I was trying to talk it up for you. Maybe you can get something. I apologize.
Just stop kidding yourself.
All right. It won't happen again. I do want to bring this up, though, because we'll get to Major League Baseball and whatnot. But I did we as we're into the postseason now, one of the things that we did not bring up last week that is actually worth bringing up now, and usually we do some listener questions throughout, but this was brought up, and I want to bring this up early since we're talking about the association. Colin Murphy checked in with us earlier today, said that it's probably an overreaction, but I know you aren't high on Detroit, and the path is reasonable. So if you want to get nuts, Desmond Bane is 200-1 on the score, formerly ESPN, to win Eastern Conference MVP. Paolo's 80-1, and as Colin notes, he got him up to 88-1 with a boost over on MGM. Obviously, Finals MVP and Conference Finals MVP markets are up. Do you buy what Colin's selling here with the Magic's holding a 1-0 series lead over Detroit, arguably the more talented team on paper, and looking at maybe Bane or Banchero to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP and have pretty good tickets should they make the run?
So before the game on Friday against Charlotte, what would you have made of an idea such as betting Bane to win Eastern Conference MVP?
I would have laughed.
Of course you would have. So why are you not laughing right now?
Because styles make fights, and they can win this series against Detroit
sure.
because of the matchup.
Okay.
Yeah, because the matchup matters.
And by the way, to point this out, I disagreed with you, but you drew a line through Detroit weeks ago to win the Eastern Conference. So you were adamant about that. And maybe they lose this series, and they're one and done. It's the one seed overall and a team that won 60 games. Are the Magic really going to get beyond the Cavaliers in round two, if that's the team, and then either beyond the Celtics or the Knicks? That can happen?
I don't think so. Now, for the Cavaliers, I don't think so. You know this, and I've been pretty firm on this. Yeah, I've been firm on 2 points, that the Pistons, I drew a line through them, as you mentioned, in one of our conversations. The other was that the Cavs are like my team in the Eastern Conference. Like, I like this team. I believe in this team. I think they're legitimately on par with Boston, and we'll talk about that should they meet. Because I don't know if Boston, I don't know, like, it's going to be a tough series against New York if that's the series they get, but we'll see.
It will be.
But I've been adamant that Cleveland's my team. So I think that there is a firm stop for Orlando in the second round should they make it there. I also think there's a firm stop for Detroit in the second round should they make it there. But I guess this is about, you know, opportunity in terms of hedging. And obviously, Desmond Bane will not be, you know, in triple digits to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP should they make the Eastern Conference Finals. He'll be one of the short shots to do it. And he's still currently at DraftKings 100-1 to win that award. Paolo Banchero is still sitting at that 80-1 that Colin brought up. So, well, it would all be about, like, finding different opportunities should they make it there, if you want to sit on those. But I don't think that they make it there.
So, I mean, this is what the kind of outside the box thinking that I really like, and what we kind of try to do here once in a while, and a question that I try to ask before every season starts, like in any sport where you're going to be talking awards. And that is, you know, one of the questions, who's the biggest long shot on the board that you could actually see a realistic path for cashing? Like, I thought Jaylen Brown for the Celtics this year was the longest shot on the board that would have maybe a path, right? In case everything breaks their way, they happen to be the one seed, potentially win that division, and they just start awesome without Jason Tatum. Well, it looks like his coach is going to win Coach of the Year, and it just, there's too much talent in the NBA to get by the guys that were in front of him. So I like that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
I just, if he bets it, and anybody who does, I hope you win your tickets, but I can't get there. I think that Orlando's ceiling is maybe beyond Detroit, like we talked about, but then after that, I can't imagine they're going to go much further.
Like, I know, because the big payout is always something that you're chasing. I'd rather just bet the Magic at 45-1 to win the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I would agree with
just,
that.
And just sit there and sit on that and then wait to see what happens should they get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, who knows? Maybe it's New York, which is obviously, you know, an easier path, if you will, should they make it past Cleveland. Should they even win their series against Detroit, which is always going to be something you have to throw out there as a caveat, considering they're only leading 1-0. But I will say this. Detroit is in a little bit of a mess, man. You know, as you said, I wasn't really a believer in them, but styles do make fights, and we can talk about that series just really quickly because that's not going to resume. How about this? We're not going to see them again until, what is it, Wednesday. So game two is not until Wednesday. Yeah, game two is not until Wednesday, which is quite the break for them. What do you make of where we're at right now with the series? Would you look at an adjusted series price for Detroit right now, down 1-0 in this set? The adjusted number, if you look at the board, on average, we can call the price for Detroit right around minus, what am I looking at here? Look at the wrong one. Yeah, minus 215, minus 220.
I would absolutely look at Detroit. I was a little concerned about how nobody really stepped up outside of Cunningham in that game, and yet the team thrived when Cunningham was out. for that time with the collapsed lung. Is that a little weird to you? But now maybe they're getting used to playing with him again. It's also maybe a little bit of nerves, although we were in the playoffs last year. I will point this out. And the reason why I would look at Detroit on the series price, and that is because if you lose at home, favored in game one in the first round, since 2021, in game two, teams are 7-0 straight up and 7-0 ATS. If you go back to 2017, teams in game two are 13-1 straight up and 13-1 ATS in that situation. That would apply to Detroit coming up in game two, obviously. It's a pretty good trend there where they, you know, everybody talks about the whole zigzag thing and the idea of, but I like what Human said today on primetime. It's been a thing for 25 years. Everybody talks about it. Everybody knows about it. But I think there's maybe something to the desperation we're going to get out of the Pistons in game two is going to be off the charts. And they're already a team that will, I mean, turn it into a football game or a rugby match and try to beat the daylights out of you. So I would expect them to win this game. Probably a decent chance to cover as well. It's a huge number, but history says that teams have really bounced back here in this spot.
Well, it's also the natural letdown because if you're Orlando, you've done your job, haven't you? You know, you needed to take, like, if you were going to win a series as a team that has to start on the road, you just got to take one of the first two. And you've done what you did. And so there's the human element to, all right, cool. We got the one that we needed out of the two that are getting played here. Let's just, it's not that they go out there and quit, but there's a natural tendency to let up. I mean, you think about where Orlando was narratively, everybody throwing dirt on them, thinking they're done, they're cooked. And then they string together two of their best games that we've seen in a long time, which of course they did, beating the absolute tar out of Charlotte and then doing that in game one. So you let up there, you come back. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off, but there is kind of a history of this. If you go back to 2023, and I'm going off memory right now.
Yeah.
Did this happen with the Heat? Jimmy Butler got in with the play-in game. Then the 8 seed had Giannis and the Bucks as the 1 seed in a team that just won the title 2 years previously. And the Heat took them down in 5 games. Mm-hmm. And they went on and won the Eastern Conference. So that has happened only a couple of years ago. Team out of Orlando, same exact division. And I would say that that Milwaukee team, top of my head, was probably better than this Detroit team and maybe not even close.
Yeah, I would say
that sound about right? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, their best player was better than the Pistons' best player at this point right now.
Yep.
So Giannis obviously being there. The other point I wanted to make about this, and we'll talk about the Western Conference too, and you know, we don't have much on the adjusted series price for Phoenix and OKC unless you have something on the Suns potentially having an opportunity. I did want to bring this up. I brought this up today on Money Moves, but I think it's worth for audience. And it's not so much a futures thing, but I guess it's more of an overall playoff thing. Home teams. So over the weekend, everybody was freaking out about the favorites, but I thought the main point to make was that home teams were dominant, not just favorites.
Right.
Home teams were 7-1 straight up and against the spread. So I went back to 2022 on this, and generally home court is more important in the postseason. But Mitch, like the actual number you can put to it, how much better home court gets for you in the postseason is pretty crazy. So I'm going to rattle off some numbers here, but I will try to label them as such so you can follow with me. So let's go back to 2022. Average net rating for home teams in the regular season in 2022 was plus 1.9. So they outscored opponents by just 1.9 points per 100 possessions in the regular season. In the postseason that year, it spiked to plus 4.7. In 2023, the average home court net rating went from plus 2.7 in the regular season to plus 4.3. In 2024, it went from plus 2.3 to plus 5.1. And then last year, it went from plus 1.7 to a flat plus 6.
Wow.
So last year, home teams on average, outscored their opponents by 6 points per 100 possessions. And over the weekend, before we had our games tonight, the net rating for home teams in the 8 games that we saw, a plus 11.5, and home teams were 7-1 straight up and against the spread. So my whole point here is, look, you can make the argument home court should be worth like 4 points now. So when you watch some of these games go back to different arenas now for game threes, as we're getting to that point in a couple of days, just know that when you see these massive swings of like 6-7 points and you're like, why is that so big? That's why. Home court definitely gets upgraded in the postseason, and it just matters more, as we have seen now stretching back to 2022. And I think it's worth noting for audience.
Certainly. And that will absolutely be evident for these teams that are going to go back home from games 3 and 4, and they're down 2 games to none. And you'll
down
see
two
that
nothing in, going back home.
Yeah, you'll see that in the first quarter, in the first half. That's the angle that Ewens talked about, I think, on primetime that he was referencing. Like, that's been a thing now for
favorite.
A quarter century, basically. It's great to talk about anyway. But here's the thing, too. FanDuel took a stand last year. While, like, every book made, like, similar adjustments and had it all baked in, if you pay attention, maybe they're going to do it again this year. FanDuel was out on an island, and they were like, hey, if you want to bet this, come with us. Bet it over here. And they were like, they had completely different numbers for the first quarter and the first half than any other book.
Like, so I will put traditional first quarter, first half is what I'm assuming.
Just
for an example, like one that always sticks out is, you know, you'll have a team down 2-0 going back home, and it might be a pick or whatever it is for the game. They'll be 2-point favorites for the first quarter and like 3-point favorites for the first half, but the game line will be pick. But
sure.
When you're talking about FanDuel, were they just lining it like a traditional, however it would be, first quarter, first half, or how were they doing it?
I think it was a lot lower than what other books were doing.
Okay, yeah.
So it was more like throw out the trends. If I recall correctly, I think I might have that like in my rundowns from last year. I'd have to go back and look overall, but it's something to pay attention to like this week coming up, because we're going to have some teams going back home down 0-2.
Yeah. I will say, I know for a fact off the top of my head, because I've been tracking this now for the last four postseasons for sure, it has been a losing proposition because this is so baked into the market. It's ridiculous, some of the numbers you're
right.
playing first quarter, first half. So,
mm-hmm.
But I'll have some official numbers on that on Money Moves coming up this week. All right, let's take our first break. On the other side, we could touch real quick on some Western Conference stuff. We do have some looming injury news that we can hit on really quickly, but also we have to get into Major League Baseball. Mitch has a new Cy Young Award addition that he has made. Our Rookie of the Year standout continues to do just that, and he is starting on Tuesday. We have a lot to get to here on Pod to the Futures. So the Western Conference has become pretty interesting, I think. We'll see what tonight brings for Minnesota and Denver as we're recording this on a Monday night. San Antonio handles business against the Portland Trailblazers in like a faux competitive game. Trailblazers like tied the game at one point in the third quarter and then let go of the rope there. And then OKC is going to just absolutely curb stomp the Phoenix Suns in this series. Maybe, though. I don't know. Remember, they blew out the Memphis Grizzlies last year in game one, and then there was like some weirdness in game two against the Grizzlies, and you know they found themselves in a little bit of a dogfight, so we'll see if that's actually the case. But you alluded to this. So we had a bet that we had discussed in the preseason.
Right.
We are here now in the postseason, and we're alive, we're dead? What is this?
Okay, so you know we like to be fully transparent on the show. And that's one of the reasons why I brought up the Louisville bet last year. The number was gone, mm-hmm. but I want people to know that I bet Louisville. And that is something that we can like talk about as a potential winner or an absolute loser next year in college
basketball.
Gotta make
sure you do that nowadays.
Gotta make sure you're doing this right for receipt purposes. So one that we talked about all the way back in October, probably the first month of us doing this podcast, was the San Antonio Spurs simply meeting the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals at 65-1. And because San Antonio decided to sit everybody on the final day of the regular season and they lost that game at Denver, that can no longer win. We gave out two bets, and it was available at DraftKings. That was one of them. The other one was Oklahoma City against Denver at 22-1. So some people who listen to the podcast have, I think, both of those in pocket. The Spurs one's dead, and I can't believe that's how it died. That absolutely sucks, but the Denver-Oklahoma City one is live, and I hope that we get Denver and San Antonio, because that series is going to be awesome, and I'm coming around to your way of thinking, by the way, where the Nuggets are going to get them.
So excited to get it. For people who are watching the podcast, I was getting something on my phone. I looked up immediately. I was like, yeah. Look, dude, they're freaking good, and they are red hot right now. Technically have won 13 straight if you go back to the regular season now. Jokic is playing well, and they didn't even play that well in game one.
I
don't want to spend a lot of time because, again, they're going to play tonight, and I'm sure they're going to get blown out as we're discussing this. But, yeah, man. And the Ant Edwards knee thing is also kind of hovering over this, which might make their series a little bit easier. We'll see if that really plays out, dealing with the same knee injury that Steph Curry has been dealing with. So, yeah, I hope it is. I hope Denver can pull through this, and I do think OKC is going to have their hands full with the team that they had their hands full with last year and got pushed to 7 games by. So,
yeah.
We'll see if that's actually the case. Phoenix, by the way, and Oklahoma City will play again on Wednesday. So that is, again, a spaced out series. 17 is the spread in favor of Oklahoma City. Total of 214. The current number right now as we're looking at it. Any hope for Phoenix? You want to take a 3.5? You want to take a 2.5?
No.
Are we just going to sit there and wait for this thing to be done?
They had a great season. They completely overachieved. This team is just, Oklahoma City at full strength is just an absolute powerhouse.
Yep. You know, it's funny. I saw this and it was actually a really good analysis. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Pina.
Michael Pina.
Excuse me. Yeah. Might have been him. But anyway, that Phoenix was just too small for Oklahoma City. And,
sure.
And a couple of years ago, you would have been like, what do you mean? Like, this is just a guard-oriented team. But they are now. They're big and they're strong. And yeah, they just don't really have Phoenix the size to deal with what Oklahoma City is putting out there. And yeah, I don't know if OKC is going to be a good ATS team because they're power rated to the moon. Again, laying 17 in a playoff game is absolutely nuts. But I mean,
I can't even, I laughed today when we kind of went over that game and they were putting that up on the screen. I'm just like, I watched, you know, most of that game and I watched the number close at 17. I can't get over that. 17 for a first round game is absolutely bonkers.
Yep. We can also note here, as we'll put a bow on the NBA, we'll get to baseball and the NFL draft too, more importantly, coming up in a little bit. Cleveland and Toronto. Cleveland opens up 3 in game 3 on the road against the Raptors. This is not going to occur until Thursday. Totals 219.5. And I want to point this out. Again, we're a futures pod, but I think, you know, looking ahead is the future. So I had bet under in the game tonight. Just keep an eye on these adjustments from the totals and keep an eye too on the way these games are played. And that seems obvious, but the reason why I had bet Cleveland and Toronto under today, that was a slow-paced game in game 1. Not slow-paced, but it was only 98 possessions between the two teams, both of them. But both were ungodly efficient from three-point range. Toronto was ungodly efficient at the rim, and they had a combined 63 free throw attempts between the two teams in game 1. Those are all some strong indicators that that was a game that went over because of some things that probably aren't replicable. And sure enough, market over-adjusted, opened 224.5. on a game that closed 217.5 in game 1, and game falls on 222. So just keep that in mind as you're kind of looking around at some of these numbers and whatnot, and game to game, some of the adjustments. We always focus so much on the spreads, but you can really find a lot on these totals as they adjust game to game. So just to point out for our audience. All right, we can carry this over. You have something else?
No, I was going to say game 1 unders were 7-1.
Yes, they were.
It's,
yes.
Right? It's
the unders
like,
had the day and the favorites.
I will just tail it by saying this. I mean, we saw all these totals come down. I think on average, it was like 5 points below the typical game in the NBA for the regular season. Mm-hmm. But it's a brand new season, and it's a different style of basketball. And the same thing can be said for hockey. Because as I've pointed out several times, like I didn't know which way it was going to go. I assumed that it was going to be like more of an under. But I was asking people who have been around hockey way longer than me. They bet the sport more than I do. Like Pittsburgh closed the final 20 games of the regular season by going 17-2-1 to the over, right? And every game was 6.5. I'm like, is that going to continue postseason against Philadelphia? I have my doubts. Game 1, no chance. Tonight, game 2, they got beat 3-0. So the unders tell the story. And like first period unders have absolutely crushed it so far in the NHL playoffs.
Yeah. By the way, I'm not a big hockey guy, but just going through the numbers, I'll just throw out there that, you know, Stu Skinner through the first couple of games, and if you go back to his starts in April, hasn't been particularly great. Mm. Just throwing that out there. Okay. That is my hockey observation. Carolina's going to kill me today.
How about a little Flyers to win the East?
So,
shout out
Chris Becerro.
Okay.
Becerro came on Money Moves 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it was when Philly was on the outside looking in, and I can't remember if he bet him to win the East or to win the Stanley Cup at like some crazy number. But had painted he painted the picture. He had two of them. One of them didn't make it. It was San Jose. The other was Philadelphia.
I'm going to text him right now.
And yeah, ask him. Maybe by the end of the show, he'll respond that you can get what number he had. But yeah, kudos to him because he did have something big on them when they're on the outside looking in. So, but you're right. I mean, after late to the party, that's fine. But it seems like Vladar's a good enough goaltender, dude. Like they're going to play well enough. His numbers, I was kind of surprised. I mean, under 2.5 goals against average, save percentage over 90. It's really kind of all you need. Just get hot and get into this postseason, and I think you can make a run here if you're a Philadelphia, for sure.
Muck it up, become super annoying on the rink, play your style of hockey, and you know, people are not going to want to play you. I mean, they're up 2-0 in the first round, and it's the NHL playoffs where basically anything can happen, so that means a couple things here. The Penguins can come back and win the series, or they're absolutely live, meaning the Flyers to win the East, and now that we have this much more data in front of us, 11-1, I don't know, maybe it's still worth a bet.
Sure. Well, and I'll throw out there, as I like to make fun of Stormy for, they're also on the right side of the bracket, correct? Because as Stormy likes to say, the soft Euros on the Carolina Hurricanes, who can't handle deep playoff runs, if you get them, and right now they're about to poop their pants because they were up 2-0, I believe, over Ottawa. And it's now 2-2 in overtime with 5 minutes left. So we'll see if they can pull this off and take a 2-0 series lead. But either way, you know, a lot of people don't believe in Carolina because of their postseason failings.
Sure.
And you get that team in the second round should you be able to win this and move on.
Okay. I've been.
It's fraudulent.
I think I'm going to make myself bet them here.
Okay. All right. Really quickly then. You know what? I'm going to do this. Let's reset and take a break. We can spend a full segment on the NFL draft. Tough. There's a lot of information out there, a lot of moving pieces. I know you did a lot of download this weekend on what's going on. I was talking to Tim Murray earlier today about some of the pieces that might go and where they might go. We had a big trade over the weekend that adjusts everything too with the Cincinnati Bengals dealing the 10th overall pick to the New York Giants. So let's reset. Hit some NFL draft on the other side. So I'm going to be selfish initially to start our NFL draft conversation because it actually is an interesting prop every single year. We always care about the quarterbacks. We saw some really interesting line move on this over the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 days or so. So I was on the air with Stormy, and I'm very adamant. For those who don't know, who maybe are listening to this or me for the first time, the one thing I know I bet every single year in the NFL draft is total quarterbacks drafted in the first round. I bet it under every year. This is the 9th year in which we've had NFL draft betting. The under is 6-2.
9 already.
What's that? Isn't it crazy? Yeah, isn't it 9 already? Do you remember? Remember we had our first NFL draft broadcast at VSiN, and then all of a sudden now we're here, and this is our 9th one already. So total quarterbacks drafted in the first round is 6-2 to the under since we've had this NFL draft betting. Now, you might think, well, what does that matter year to year? It's a different class, different teams, different needs. Why does that all tie together? I would say it's because we usually overvalue quarterbacks all the time, whether it comes to conversations, narratives, everything. And that falls in the NFL draft, where we as bettors and simpletons, and I'm including myself in here, will generally just think that all these teams are so quarterback hungry and that they'll jump at the thought of going to get them. You hear the same cliches all the time, extra year of control, trade back into the first round, all those sort of things. I am not a buyer, but what makes it interesting, as I alluded to, this was well over $2 for the over on 1.5 quarterbacks last week. It dipped to as low as -115 to the over at one point over the last few days. We're now snapping back. Earlier today, it reached $2, but we're back down to over 1.5, -165, under +125. These numbers courtesy of DraftKings. So again, shop around with where you're looking. Ty Simpson is the only question. Will he be a first-round quarterback? Mitch, what say you?
Okay, so you're saying that under 1.5, you said that current number is +165.
No. Over 1.5, -165,
over.
Under +125.
Okay, under +125. Okay, so how about this? Different way to look at it, and you can get different juice on this. Both Circa and now the Westgate posted props on Monday for the draft.
Okay.
They put up a draft position, both books have it, of Ty Simpson. They put it at 32.5. So basically, it's the same thing. Is he a first-round pick or is he not? Circa currently has him -185 under 32.5. Westgate, -180 under 32.5. So basically, betting over -165.5 would save you 15 cents or 20 cents of juice. But they're telling you that, you know, the favorite to go in the first round there.
And what's the under on his draft position?
32.5.
No, I mean, like, what's the price on the under?
-180, -185.
Oh, I'm sorry. Over. I always do this with draft
props.
What's the over?
+150 at Westgate.
Okay.
And +130 at Circa.
So in other words, like you're talking about, you know, if you're shopping around, if you like total quarterbacks drafted in the first round, over 1.5 might be the play. But if you like under, maybe take Ty Simpson under his draft position.
Sure.
You get a little bit more out of it.
Basically. So this thing's been far. Yeah. It's been all over the map. And I'll be honest, I spent a lot of the weekend reading and listening about the draft. Because I love betting the event. We can spend an hour on what it's like to bet this event living in Nevada. It sucks, quite frankly. And I got bored with the Ty Simpson talk. I'm at that point where I can't do it anymore. So I kind of tuned it out, or I fast forwarded, like, I don't care. Nobody has any idea. They're all spitballing with if he's going to go in the first round or not. And if I had a gun to my head based on, I guess, people that I listen to, probably more than 50% of them, they think that he's going first round and the Cardinals are going to be a player. So gun to my head, I'd probably say yes at Benham, but I want nothing to do with wagering my own hard-earned money on this prop.
So when you were taking in a lot of information, what was some of the stuff that stuck out?
I mean, the McShay stuff from Sunday night was absolutely bonkers, and that is real possibility that Jeremiah Love is going to go third to Arizona.
I don't understand this. So, that's crazy. Now, nothing against Jeremiah Love. It's just, again, like, you have the third overall pick, positional value. Why not to go get one of these edge rushers or something?
I know. So I'll get to exactly what McShay said in a second, but I'll set it up by telling you what Daniel Jeremiah said on his conference call. He puts it up as his podcast every single year. He asked the question, basically, Love to the Titans. He said that this one's fascinating because they still need to build out the rest of the team. They absolutely have to add more guys on the offensive line. He did not love their offseason, especially on offense, but he went on for a couple of minutes and he goes, basically, I'm breaking my own rule by saying that they are going to take Love fourth overall, even though I don't like the idea. So that's where he was at with it. McShay said, quote, there's a voice within the Cardinals that wants Love third. I'm hearing that voice carries more weight than maybe I thought. I'm told if Arizona sticks, it's Love. I'm also told, I don't know if there's a team in the top 10 more eager to move out. End of quote.
So could the Cardinals are desperately trying to get out of third, right. But if they don't have a deal, then they'll take Love.
Then they'll take running back third overall, which is just...
That doesn't make any sense.
Again, Love, everybody says he's a better prospect than Ashton Jeanty. You can agree or disagree. Like, I thought Jeanty was the absolute bee's knees. Was it a good move for the Raiders to take him? To me, that screams stupid move. You're not even close to competing. You need to build up that offensive line, add a bunch of other stuff. Don't take a running back at sixth overall last year. It'd be the same thing with a card. Like, Love might turn out to be Emmitt Smith, I don't know, or LaDainian Tomlinson. But taking him right now in the current state of the NFL, third or fourth overall, just seems like a mistake to me.
Right. Again, especially if you don't have the offensive line, everything. We've learned so many lessons about this. Like, I don't know how many times over we have to do this. And it doesn't make much sense. I mean, one would assume that you're trying to move out of three, but also you want Love, so you understand to an extent somewhere in that building that he's not worth taking at that spot. And yet you will still take him if you're stuck.
Yep.
That doesn't make any sense to
me.
But
here's the beauty of the betting the draft. It doesn't matter what we think.
Correct.
Right? We do not have to agree with any of this.
I didn't agree that Michael Penix should have been taken there after you signed Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, okay. Totally fair.
Right.
But if I somehow got a text right now from Daniel Jeremiah or Todd McShay or an NFL insider, and they said, it's 100%. Jeremiah Love is going to Arizona. You can laugh all you want. Got to bet it, right?
Yep. Well, so to that point, really quick, I'll share a story. The year that Brock Bowers was in the draft, I, through somebody else, had gotten some pretty solid information that the Los Angeles Rams were going to trade up to go and get Brock Bowers. Like, that was it. Like, that was what they were trying to do. They were going to do it. They wanted to go and get him. And so I had put a decent amount of money on the exact result, you know, Brock Bowers to be drafted by the Los Angeles Rams. Sure enough, he gets drafted by the Las Vegas Raiders. A report comes out after the draft that the Rams were desperately trying to get up there for somebody. They don't know who, but they were trying to get up there. Mm-hmm. And of course, from what I had heard, it was Bowers. So to your point too, this information actually might all be correct. It just also might not come to fruition either, which is the brutal thing about the draft.
Right. And I'll give you another example. Like, who do you trust, right? Do you trust the NFL insiders, the draft pundits, or do you trust the betting market? My example would be what's going to happen at number two overall. I still, and we're recording this on Monday night, it's like 8:00 Pacific time. I still see like probably more than 50% of people, either insiders or mock draft people who I trust, they have David Bailey going second overall to the Jets. Then why has Arvell Reese turned into a $4 favorite to go number two overall?
Like, for what it's worth, he's minus 300 now, but yeah.
Is he? Okay. Do you trust the betting market?
No.
At this stage of the game, or are we trusting people who are still going to go out there and say, my guys are telling me it's going to be David Bailey number two overall? And now, here's the thing. Again, when people listen to this podcast, it's going to be hours after you and I actually record it. Maybe something else comes out and it completely flips again. So we still have time to go before the draft, but this time of year, I tend to trust the betting market.
See, I trust the betting market the day before or
the
day of.
Oh, the day of 100%.
100%. Yes, right. Those are the only line. I mean, we just went through the ebbs and flows of the the quarterback first, like the number one, excuse me, the 1.5 quarterbacks in the first round. If you trust the betting market, which one do you trust? Do you trust the move all the way down to -115 to the over, or do you trust the move that got it back up to -200, or the move that brought it back down to -165? Like, what in the world are you supposed to trust when you're looking at the market, kind of guessing at what you're supposed to be doing? I trust the betting market when we get to within like 24 to 48 hours of the draft.
Yeah.
That's what I trust.
And then certainly for those who are listening or watching this podcast outside of the state of Nevada again, you are going to have the availability to bet on this thing up until the draft, right? Prediction markets, which we don't have to have available here in Nevada.
Tracking prediction markets during the draft is going to be incredible.
It will be. My example would be this. An hour before the Bryce Young draft a couple years ago, it was still a question mark. Like, is it going to be Stroud number two? Or is it going to be Stroud number one? Can Will Anderson go number two overall, right? And then all of a sudden, an hour before the draft, Bryce Young got steamed up to like -3,000 at DraftKings to go number one overall. Yeah. And CJ Stroud got steamed up to a similar price to go number two overall. And I'm like, damn it. I have like huge prices on these guys, but to go flip-flop, you know, basically, and Will Anderson number two overall. And they're right. The betting market's right. They know what's going to happen. And they pegged it.
Absolutely. The day of, buy them hook, line, and sinker. I'm in. But leading up to it still, we don't really know that much. Did you have anything else draft-wise?
It's. I really want to be able to help out the listeners and the viewers. It's frustrating out here because it's very difficult to get down.
It's difficult to get down. You don't get much down. They don't offer much.
Yep.
And then outside of that too, I mean, like, you get taken down 24 hours before the draft, so you can't really play with any information that comes down late either.
Right. And I here's one. Now, the number has absolutely moved. It was Tim Murray got this at 19-1 over the weekend. And we had a guest on today who, Charlie Campbell, has been the most accurate mock drafter for those in NFL media going back to last decade. He said on the air that Tyson to go 5th overall to the Giants.
Okay.
So if you can still find a rogue number out there, again, you're going to catch this a day, you know, 12 hours after we're taping, whatever, in that range. He could either be favored to go 5 overall, or he might balloon back up to 9-1. Who knows? But that caught my attention. Like, I didn't hear that one. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I will admit fully to our audience, I don't have much in the draft. I'm going to bet under on these quarterbacks in the first in the first round, and that's really about it that we've got so far for me.
It's been deflating, man.
Well, I don't know what this draft is. I'll be fully honest. Usually I like the NFL draft, but I don't know if it's I've been getting ready for postseason stuff or, you know, personal stuff, whatever it is. This one just has not caught me to this point. I don't know why.
I get it. I'm really intrigued now because of all the rumors, and I'm a sucker for some of the stuff. But also just like trying to get bets down, and, you know, you want to get down. I'll give an example. Trying to get down a couple $100 on one of the books out here, and every single time they're like, would you like $8.74? I've been beaten to death by it. So it drives me insane. And I'm at my wit's end, to be honest.
$8.74.
You should see my notes on this. I'll share them with you. What they gave me on like 4 or 5 different bets.
Sure. That's ridiculous. All right. Let's take our last break here. On the other side, we'll get to Major League Baseball. I mentioned you have a Cy Young bet that you have made. We have a congrats to hand out as well, and a little bit more as we close out this week's episode of Pod of the Futures. At the risk of drawing the ire of many in the world, I would like to hand out a congratulations to Mitchell Moss, who on this fair program did give out Yordan Alvarez to reach 10 home runs hitter to reach 10 home runs first in the Major League Baseball season. He did that despite flirting with disaster and not really getting it done. My man is raking to begin the year. I sent you, I can't remember what this guy's name is, but it was an old bit actually from when LeBron was with Cleveland, where he's in the locker room telling everybody, I just want you all to know, that wasn't my fault. And Yordan Alvarez is essentially that at this point right now, given the way he's playing, coupled with the way the Astros are playing, although they did beat Cleveland today. Spencer Arrighetti got a big performance from him. But Yordan Alvarez, raised to 10. You got it. Good job.
Thanks, buddy. And I'd like to point out that we, in fact, also discuss losers that we have on this podcast. And for those who don't know, it's a futures podcast. And as I've said many times on the show, we're going to give out far more losers than winners.
Mitch, I'm going to take this step further. You and I both host programs on the Vegas Stats and Information Network. We are back to back. And there's a reason why we're back-to-back. Not only are we a great 1-2 punch, Stormy and myself, you and Paul Howard, you know that we are two shows that keep track of our records with units won and lost at the end of every single
program. Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, yeah. Indeed. Just want to point that out for anybody who was wondering. You know, you could check our best bets at the end of every show, record and units won lost for Stormy and myself, and the same with Mitch Moss and Paul Howard.
So that was a fun bet. I will say that first time I had ever noticed it, and I hope more books offer that in the future. Right? It's kind of like the first, or I should say, team with the most wins in a given month. It's different ways to bet baseball. And it's a blast to give you, you know, basically action every single day.
And I mean, most home runs in a month, probably by player, right? You could do that month to month. Most home runs in June, July, whatever. Yeah.
100%. And now, I was not watching the game tonight, but I saw some of this tracking online. I guess he had like three more barrels today that resulted in outs, but he just absolutely smoked like three more baseballs. The Astros are awful, so he can't win the MVP, right?
That's my question. So let me look this up. I should know this off the top of my head. Mike Trout won an MVP one year in which the Angels won floating around like 80 wins. I'll get that exactly what exactly that was. Let's see. Yeah, so Mike Trout won MVP when the Angels finished with, oh, wow, holy smokes. I didn't realize they were this bad. Guess how many wins the Angels had for one of his MVPs?
Don't say like 73.
Good guess. 74.
He won the MVP on a 74-win team?
Yes. Trout won his second MVP award when they finished 74 and 88.
What year was that?
His second MVP was 2000 and... I'll get the exact year for you here.
It's really not that long ago because he's been in the league since...
2004, 2016.
What?
Let me see. I'll cross-reference this really quickly.
That's only 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, 74 and 88. Yep. Yep, and he won MVP. Yeah. Yeah, I knew there was a losing record in there. I thought they were like 80 and 82. No, so he won MVP and they were 74. They won 74. Now, he scored 123 runs. He only hit 29 homers that year. He had a ridiculous WAR of 10.4, which led Major League Baseball. 116 walks, an on-base percentage of .440. And an OPS plus of 173. So, like, you're going to have, like, Jordan's got to put up some bonkers numbers to get this done. But, I mean, the thing that would work in his favor is I think the Astros are bad, but I think they're going to be, like, I don't know, like an 80-ish win team.
Okay.
So that'll kind of help. You would assume Hunter Brown comes back at some point. And I was texting to Guardians superfan Adam Burke today because I was only scoreboard watching because I was, you know, my kid was out of baseball practice today when I was watching it. And, he mentioned, because I asked, I was like, well, maybe if Arrighetti kind of comes around, because Spencer Arrighetti, for those who don't know, we've kind of been waiting for this for a while. Like, he's got the stuff. He came out, looked really good, but then ultimately did flame down. My whole point here being, if Arrighetti can put things together, then maybe you're talking about a pitching staff that can, with the duct tape and bubblegum, maybe get them to like 82 wins. But as Burke pointed out, he said that Arrighetti didn't get a lot of whiffs, not a lot of swings and misses, just a lot of balls in play that were scooped up. So we'll see if that actually happens. Either way, Alvarez could.
So I'm absolutely stunned that happened with Trout only 10 years ago. I honestly, in this day and age, what does a player have to do to win on a team that's actually just below .500? If they were 80 and 82, I think they have to blow away the field and probably have way better numbers than Mike Trout had that year, which probably is going to be impossible.
Yeah, I would say so.
Well, okay.
You added a Cy Young.
I did. So I have now three guys in the American League, and I actually cashed out on my Trevor Rogers ticket. It was a small loser. He had a horrible start over the weekend, and there was going to be too much competition in the American League. I got that one wrong. I'm on Jose Soriano after his second start in the year, and I wish I was in Matt Youmans' shoes, but I kind of want to add some guys still while the numbers are out there. I added some Cam Schlittler with the Yankees. Youmans has 300-1. I can't that number again. How was that available? But good for him for noticing it. Schlittler has the highest WAR out of any starting pitcher in baseball so far, almost 12 Ks per nine. He's made 5 starts so far. The ERA is 1.95. The FIP is 0.85. I just think there's a chance where he can be in the mix to win this thing, and 20-1 is probably going to, in fact, at some books move to like 10 or 11-1. That could be because, you know, he's also playing for the Pinstripers. Don't forget that. That could be cut down to like 3-1 soon. And I love his ability, and I'm kind of mad at myself for not getting on it earlier in the season.
I think the abilities there. I would ask, do you think that he's going to be able to get to 200 innings? Because that seems to be like the benchmark of innings pitch for a guy to win Cy Young.
Might be a little bit tough. Can he touch 180?
Yeah. 73 so far is his high. And obviously that was last year when he made his debut. 73 and 14 starts. Mm-hmm. So
it was a little FOMO as well.
That's it.
Because
sure. I mean, the stuff is awesome.
It's
he's
so
been
good.
Great.
He blows away almost everybody that he faces. Now, I think a better question is this. People are going to have FOMO on not having tickets on Mason Miller to win the NL Cy Young. And he's down to like 10 to 1 already.
FanDuel's got 20 as I'm looking at
Do
it
they
right
really?
Now. If anybody wants to get in there, yeah.
Well, that changes things a little bit. I mean, Ks per nine, 21.44 at this point.
it's so
have
nuts.
You have you noticed the advanced stuff? So he hasn't allowed a run at zero. JBT, he has an XFIP of negative 0.74, and he has a FIP of negative 1.11.
Yeah. I mean, even just the nasty stuff, it's like, so his whiff rate, so pitches in the zone, how often are guys swinging and missing? 62.8%. His chase rate, how often are you getting guys to chase balls outside of the zone? 45.9%. He's like, did you see, I think was it the Angels over the weekend? I can't remember who it was. Did you see the swing and miss he generated? I think the ball, the freeze frame is great. I can't remember who it is. It might have been who was it? Either way, the hitter's like the bat's like all the way out. Like he's already swung and missed. Mitch, I'm not kidding you. I'll send you the screenshot when I can find it. The ball is in the dirt 10 feet away from the plate. Like the movement is insane, and these guys are biting on everything now. It's wild.
He would be, I think, the last pitcher of all time I would like to face.
Yeah.
Throwing that hard. By the way, his K rate is 71%.
Did you say this already? I'm sorry, because I'm actually amazed by his Baseball Savant page. How many barrels do you think he's allowed so far this year?
One.
Zero.
Zero barrels so far.
He isn't allowed a barrel at all this year.
You know, the funny thing is, the first time that he actually allows a barrel, it's probably going to go 480 feet.
Right.
Because, I mean, the power that he is generating, if you get a barrel on that thing, I mean, the exit velocity might be 125 miles an hour.
Yes. It's really true.
If you have the right guy at the plate and he swings hard and he absolutely, you know, gets the barrel on it, that thing's going to go, that's going to set an all-time record. So is 20 to 1 worth it? 10 to 1 to me, you can't bet. But there's a difference between 10 and 20 to 1, and FanDuel will take bets on this. So I've had bets in recent years on Felix Bautista, who had unbelievable numbers, and Emmanuel Clase, and I thought both guys were in the conversation, and they never had a chance to win the award. Mason Miller's numbers as of right now are just so much better than either one of those guys.
Ungodly.
And I also...
Do you think he can do this all year long, though? Because I think these numbers would be able to win it for him if he did it all season long.
What does the ERA have to be? Because that will be a big talking point.
I mean, I would assume it's got to be almost like, would it be sub one?
Sub one's doable from him.
Yeah.
Is that good enough, though, or does it have to be like 0.25?
It might have to be. I mean, because the standards, and they're like, people might be saying, like, what's your problem? No, like just the standards for relievers, because their workload is so small, it has to be insane.
Now, I will ask this, though. When you look at the competition in the National League, Skeens, of course, at the top. Yamamoto with the Dodgers. Sanchez, awesome, but a little shaky so far this year in spots. Chris Sale. Is Ohtani really going to win it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find guys on the board.
Am I right, by the way, in that Eric Gagne was the last one to win?
Yep, 2003.
Yeah? Okay. So just for that reference, 82 and a third. He had 55 saves.
Yep.
I mean, ERA, I'm trying to find the ERA. I don't know what it was at that point. 1.2 in 77 appearances.
Okay. So the Padres also were not thought of as a contender this year. What if they are a playoff team? And the thought was also out there that what if they would sell him at the deadline, trade him at the deadline, and then it's like, well, the bet's dead if he goes to the American League. Are they going to be a 90-win team? Are they a playoff team?
They could be.
They're off to a great start. I mean...
All right. I'm a terrible host because we have 30 seconds left.
Okay.
We got lost in this. Anything you would like to leave with our audience before we hustle out of here?
You asked the question. Christopher the Madman Macero.
Yeah.
$200 at 501 for the cup. on there it is. Philadelphia.
There it is. I knew I did something.
Pretty good.
All right. Folks, we are up against it. My fault. I should pay attention. But, you know, actually, it's not my fault because Wyatt's not here. And usually I don't have
it's
to Wyatt, do all
it's all
things.
Wyatt's no. fault. I mean, really.
It's always Wyatt's fault. That weird virgin was out there at WrestleMania. All right. With that, we are all done. We appreciate everything you've done for us. And we will be back next week here on Pod to the Futures.